Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with leading international authority and scientist, Dr. Stephen Seidman, Dean, Texas State University, and CSAP President. Stephen talks about software engineering, the computing profession, professionalism and certification, and computing education. Stephen, you bring a substantive history of significant and considerable national an international contribution to education, society, industry, and computing science to this interview. We are very fortunate to have you share your many deep experiences with the audience, and thank you for this.
You're very welcome.
Stephen, can you discuss your prior roles and some key lessons that you wish to pass on?
I'd be happy to. My academic career began in 1969 when I went to New York University as an assistant professor of mathematics. Half of my career was spent as a faculty member, first at New York University from 1969 to 72, and then at George Mason University from 1970 to 90. I was a founding member of George Mason Computer Science Department. Since 1990, I've been an academic administrator. I was Computer Science Department Chair at Auburn from 1990 to 1996, and at Colorado State University from 1996 to 2001. In that year, I went to New Jersey Institute of Technology as the founding dean of their College of Computing Sciences. I left there in 2006, became dean of the College of Natural Sciences and Mathematics, University of Central Arkansas, and I moved in 2009 to Texas to become dean of the College of Science, Texas State University. My research interests have been in social networks, 10 years of work from the mid-70s to mid-80s. Note that these networks were not computer-mediated. High-performance computing from 1985 to 92, and software architectures roughly from 1988 to 2001. I've also been very involved in professional society activities, primarily dealing with computing education, professionalism, and accreditation. There are a few lessons that I'd like to pass on. First, whatever your training and education may have been, be prepared to move into new disciplines and follow unanticipated career paths. Two, respect the perspectives of disciplines and professions other than your own. Three, try to respect the contributions of faculty and academic administrators. Both are essential to the operation of an effective academic unit at university. And two more, organizational structure does matter, but you can't solve the problems of a unit simply by changing its structure. And finally, professionalism, like ethics, must be considered within a context of culture and tradition.
Stephen, it's quite a remarkable background you have. So what initially got you interested in just getting into the sciences?
I was, as a high school student, I was fascinated by the sciences, first by chemistry. I was one of those high school students who, or even younger than that, who had an impromptu laboratory in his parents' basement, did all kinds of things that in hindsight were extremely dangerous. And for various reasons, in high school I came to love mathematics, and when starting university it was a bit of a toss-up in chemistry and mathematics, but the circumstances prevailing at the time I started university gave mathematics a position. I went ahead with that.
Again, looking back over your considerable history of success and contribution, what would you consider to be your top contributions?
Well, I'll pick three from rather different directions in my career. One, in computer science, I think my top contribution was to develop formal models for module interconnection languages and for software architectural styles. That was typical of my work from the late 80s to the late 90s. Professionally, I am very proud of my work to help create an international standard for software engineering certification. That was an ISO standard. And finally, I'm very proud to have served on the team for a couple of years that is still in the process of developing an international approach to professional certification for IT.
Again, looking back in your prior roles, what were the most difficult challenges that you were not able to overcome at the time, and then what would you do differently now?
Well, let's take them one at a time. First, in my software architecture research work, I wasn't successful in getting major acceptance for my approach to modeling software architectural styles. That's a very tight-knit community. And in hindsight, the best way to do this would have been to arrange to spend a semester or a year in one of the primary research groups in software architecture and making myself more of an insider than I was. My second challenge was to try to build consensus in a newly created computing college. And this experience taught me that organizational changes aren't the answer to all problems. My third challenge was to deal with dealing with political battles and turf wars in a professional society. I was a bit naive about the eventual success of the best ideas. I've now learned that that doesn't always happen.
I see. Those are really interesting lessons that you've learned from your career.
Thank you.
What were the key disruptive forces driving change in your life, and how can we learn from your experiences?
Well, I think the primary disruptive force that I've experienced has been the rapid growth of computing. It's certainly driven much of my career. And I guess I've been a bit surprised by its emergence as multiple academic disciplines. And I've also been a bit surprised by both the constructive and destructive aspects of the fact that computing is split across several disciplines that have developed their own traditions or even inherited their own traditions. And that has been, I found that to be very disruptive.
Well, that's interesting. When you say multiple disciplines, for those in the audience, are you talking about things like systems engineering, software engineering, computer science, information technology, information
right.
management?
Things like that, but in a way, that's true. But what is particularly interesting to me is how they've inherited many of these disciplines have inherited things from the past in a way. The mathematics or science on the one hand, engineering on the second, and business on the third, at least in the university context, those influences in the past, or roots, if you want to call them that, or maybe even they're just the places where these disciplines found a home, had a major impact on how they saw themselves.
So each in your current roles, what are the biggest challenges and their solutions?
My current role academically is as Dean of the College of Science at Texas State University. Now, for those that aren't familiar with Texas State University, it's a large university with more than 30,000 students located between Austin and San Antonio in central Texas. And I have two primary challenges in this role. One is to bring the college to a greater focus on research. The university started as primarily a teaching institution, but it's been moving away from that for 10 years. But at the same time, preserving the quality of undergraduate education in all of our disciplines, and that those include computer science, mathematics, the natural and physical sciences, engineering, technology, and also to nurture the growth of a school of engineering inside a college of science. This is a relatively unusual situation and takes some effort. The solutions to both challenges provide a constantly changing landscape. In my professional role as president of the U.S. Computing Accreditation Body, CSAB, my challenge is to continue the growth of computing accreditation in the United States across an ever-expanding array of disciplines. We currently accredit programs in computer science, information systems, information technology, and software engineering. And we always get requests for expanding these efforts to new disciplines under the general computing umbrella. And to do this, the solution, I think, is to build a computer community that supports computing accreditation in general among a new generation of professionals working closely with professional societies. And in this case, I'm speaking of ACM and the IEEE Computer Society.
I see. So the ACM and the IEEE Computer Society also are global organizations. What kind of impact does that have?
That's actually a very interesting question. And it's, you know, the U.S., I think almost unique among countries, doesn't have a U.S. Computing Society as Canada does with KIPP, as the British do with BCS. And so the U.S. societies are at the same time heavily U.S. societies, and at the other, they're international organizations. And there's some tension there, and I hope creative tension.
I see. So how does the widespread adoption of the phrase software engineering impact the way software development is taught in universities?
Back in 1968, at a NATO conference, the phrase software engineering first appeared in print. It's used at the conference. Other people may have used it before, but it hasn't been recorded or verified. Anyway, as I understand it, and I certainly wasn't at the conference, the phrase was used metaphorically to try to get an engineering-style approach to developing large-scale software. Unfortunately, the fact that word is now there has given engineers, conventional, traditional engineers, a claim over software engineering, and it's often forced the development of large-scale software systems to be taught in colleges of engineering, often separated by academic borders in the teaching of computer science. It has been far from easy to separate the essence of engineering design, for example, from the instinctive feeling that engineering should involve the physical sciences.
So I would say maybe it's created a certain level of tension.
Yeah, and it works better sometimes and not so well other times. For example, in the United States, engineering accreditation is handled in a rather complex way. But one aspect of that is students have to take a fundamentals of engineering if they want to be licensed. Rather, I'm thinking of professional licensure, not accreditation. They need to take a fundamentals of engineering examination as the first step toward licensure. And even though software engineering, at least in the state of Texas, is now an acceptable engineering discipline professional licensure, you still have to take this fundamentals examination, which is heavily based on natural science topics. And most software engineers are not going to be familiar with strength materials, thermodynamics, but I think it will be a very long time before the engineering community is willing to realize, to accept the idea that you can have engineering without this. And you're right, there is tension.
What does it mean for computing informatics to be a profession, and how do views of computing professionalism vary across countries?
You know, I was involved for several years in developing an international standard software certification, and the group that wrote that standard came, members from many countries, and I got to learn quite a bit about the way professionalism, even for engineers, is viewed, or doctors or lawyers, is viewed across different countries. And we in the U.S. and possibly maybe North Canada as well have one view that isn't necessarily shared in other places, and we assume that our view is the prevailing one. For example, in the U.S., and I expect probably in Canada as well, that a professional license granted for a fixed period, a five-year period, for example, can be renewed. But there are also ethical criteria, and it is possible for a license to be removed for misconduct. Well, I learned to my surprise that that's not the case in Japan. There's absolutely no way, as I was told anyway, that a license can, that a professional credential can be removed for misconduct. They don't have a process for handling it. So it's this sort of thing I mean, that different countries have very different views of just the concept professionalism or field of concept. So we can't just assume that our model is going to prevail.
And I guess there's this sort of impact at government as well.
Absolutely. And in many countries, the role of government in higher education credentials is much, much greater than it is, and much more direct than it is in North America. And that's an important role, too. We part of our certification discussion involved one European country where basically you have to take the views of the Ministry of Education consideration.
And from a professional licensing standpoint, isn't it state-based in the U.S.?
It's state-based in the U.S. and it's province-based in Canada, as I understand it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So that creates its own challenges, too.
Absolutely.
So how does the word engineering, as applied to the computing disciplines, I would say, differ between countries?
Well, that's, as I was saying before, in North America, engineering is applied primarily to disciplines dealing with physical systems, computer, electrochemical, mechanical, aerospace, etc. This can be expected to software, extended to software, but not without some difficulty. But in Spanish-speaking countries, the term can be used much more broadly. You can find academic programs labeled information technology engineering or information systems engineering. And in the U.S., you would never think of applying engineering to anything like information systems. So this has raised actually some interesting accreditation issues. ABET is sometimes asked to credit engineering programs outside of the U.S., just as the Canadian programs go outside of Canada. And it's raised some interesting political issues within the accreditation community about how programs with a name like information technology engineering should be credited.
When should all undergraduate students learn about computing and informatics?
I believe that all undergraduate students should acquire what Larry Snyder at the University of Washington called fluency with information technology. They should become comfortable with negotiating an increasingly information-centric world and with the tools that can help to do so.
I see. So I guess that kind of ties into this computing concept, right?
Computing concepts, yes, but it really has been, you don't want to link it to what is too often taught for students generally, you know, from the general academic community, that, well, we'll teach you how to use, you know, Microsoft Office tools. And that's just too tool specific. I believe this fluency requires familiarity with concepts that are much more pervasive and just type specific.
I guess you're not in a way referencing also then pre-university students and, you know, what should be taught to them.
Well, pre-university students, I think, also need to have a sense for what computing and information are doing and can do and will do for us. And unfortunately, most IT offerings pre-university level, at least in the U.S., deal with the use of business software tools, word process, spreadsheets, presentation software, and that's not the point, I think, which that's not what students need to learn in this.
Do you think there's some possibilities then in advanced placement courses at the pre-university?
Oh, you can do that. You can teach them the program to it, and there is some of that, although there's been quite a bit of debate in the computer science community about whether the appropriateness of this and what should be taught. The problem there, one problem there is, as languages keep changing, it's very, very hard to change curricula and examinations. But I think while that possibility is an interesting one, actually, let me digress a bit. I do this with my students all the time. Some countries have paid a lot of attention pre-university computer science computing education. And the one that I think that has had the most mature efforts, the most interesting efforts, is in Israel, where they really, from the mid-90s, paid serious attention to computer science as, if you like, as a science secondary school. I'm not sure the status of that program now, but it's led us very, very interesting work. I haven't seen too many other countries done that. But as far as students who don't want that sort of intense science approach to computer science in high school, they do need to know how to front a computer-centric age or an information-centric age as citizens and consumers.
I guess there's also this debate about STEM, but there's no C in STEM.
That's right, and that's a very good point. It often gets lumped under the T in technology. I once talked with the president of IEEE, who was talking about they developed a major effort and a website for engineering for secondary students, pre-university students, and he told me and the other people listening that he considered computing as part of engineering. Well, computer scientists don't, and I'm sure IT and IS people even less so.
So in Texas, then, is credit given for computing courses when you go into university?
I've heard not very much. I'm still relatively new to Texas. Texas is in a situation where it's extremely short of secondary school mathematics and science, and I think computer science is even less of a consideration.
What impact does the adoption of international standards have on the development of more reliable software?
That's a very good question, and to me, it's not clear what the impact has been. And one issue here is that most software engineering standards, the ones developed by ISO and by IEEE, deal with process and not product. And it's my personal opinion this topic needs serious attention. Not that I exactly know where to start.
So how can partnerships improve computing education?
Computing education requires a partnership with industry. And let me give you one example. In my opinion, software engineering students, and more at the master's level than the undergraduate level, but in general, software engineering students need to work on industrial strength software systems, just as medical students need to work on cadavers, large systems for maintenance, for further development. And it's just been very, very difficult for active universities to get access to like this to be used in their education. And that's one reason why a close relationship with industry is very important. We in computer science or in computing more broadly, exist not just because we're not studying nature as the biologists, the chemists, and the physicists are. We're studying the world of these hardware and software devices that people make and use, and we need to be in to work with them, with people who develop commercially.
So we're getting near the end of the interview. So if you were to choose the areas, can you provide your predictions of future trends and their implications and opportunities?
Predicting and projecting future trends in computing is an extremely popular pastime and one that has not been very successful. But I'd like to venture too. Embedded systems will, I think, clearly play an ever-increasing role in all aspects of our lives, in our cars, in our entertainment devices, in our homes. And one consequence is that we can expect plenty of employment opportunities for software developers and engineers. A second consequence is that computing education will have to pay much more attention to embedded system design. Second, computer games have become an important sector of the computing industry. It's long been prophesied that games will play a major role in education, well, computing education, but in education more broadly, what I meant to say. I've always been a bit skeptical of this prediction, since it will require the investment of enormous resources, but I'm willing to wait and see. If it does happen, if computer games tend to have that extremely large scale of impact in education, there will be major employment implications and much more development of computing education oriented toward games development.
Now, if you were doing this interview, what three questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Well, I would ask, what was your first experience with computing? You've asked me about my mathematics and science interests, and computing is an interesting one, too. I first saw a computer in the summer of 1959. That was an IBM 650, and I was in a summer mathematics program for high school students at Columbia University. Programming was done in machine language. We were told that something called Fortransit was going to appear soon, but that what we had was machine language, and what I found particularly challenging was input and output. My second question would be, how did you choose computing as a profession? And I'd answer that as follows. My academic training was in pure mathematics. I first became interested in computing in 1971, but the impetus to move seriously into computing came from my research activities. Despite my pure mathematics background, my research in the 1970s and 1980s dealt with mathematical social science, and specifically with social networks. I built graph theoretical models of friendship and communication networks with data coming from anthropological fieldwork in Southeast Asia. I developed data structures, algorithms, and software, thousands and thousands of lines of PL1, to work with this data and models. And how did this feed back into my academic career? Well, as I was doing all this, I taught more and more courses in the computer science curriculum and then joined the computer science department at George Mason University when it separated mathematics in 1984. And at that time, gradually, I started the research in CS. So it has been a long and somewhat tortuous path.
Well, Stephen, we will continue to follow your significant global and historical contributions and the impact you're going to have, for the future and for many years to come. And you just have this remarkable history, and we know you have a very tight schedule, so we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with our audience.
Thank you very much for talking with me.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with leading international authority and scientist, Dr. Stephen Seidman, Dean, Texas State University, and CSAP President. Stephen talked about software engineering, the computing profession, professionalism and certification, and computing education.